coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in for Tom Clark, and as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. As usual, Zorba, we have a few topics to talk about today.
Yes, air pollution and what actually occurs with asthma, where's the connection, and how can we actually fix it? And then we're going to talk about the interesting thing about skin color, whether or not you're African American or Caucasian. Are you diagnosed differently if you've got a dermatological condition because of the color of your skin? Interesting research, very important things for anyone who does not have a pure white lily skin, whether or not it's going to make a difference, and whether or not your doctor can diagnose you.
And what's our special recipe today?
Spinach and artichoke stuffed mushrooms. I love spinach, I love artichokes, and I really, really, really love mushrooms. So you will love this easy dish to do, and Tom Clark will be in his kitchen ready, willing, and able to actually put this together. And if you believe that, I will tell you other fantasies too.
All right. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce that later in the show, we'll hear from Tom Clark, like you said, Zorba, in his breathtaking kitchen for the recipe segment.
You'll love it. Absolutely will love it.
We've been combing through the many voicemails listeners have left us, and of course, Zorba will be answering your questions throughout the program. So let's kick off the calls today with a caller from, actually, Zorba. Want to do some trivia again? Remember that?
Of course. Okay. Of course. I love trivia.
Let's guess the city that the caller's from.
Okay.
This caller's city is the birthplace of Baseball Hall of Famer Johnny Bench.
Uh-huh.
Got that?
Yeah. And you got to make sure I even know who Johnny Bench is, but that's okay. Let's start with that. Yeah.
And this is also the city where the shopping cart was invented and first used in a grocery store.
The shopping cart.
These are kind of obscure, I know.
Buffalo.
That's a good guess. That's a good guess.
It's a good guess, but it's wrong. It's wrong. Sorry.
Think like South Central.
South Central. Knoxville.
Close. Well, kind of close. Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. Wait a minute. Right. Knoxville is nowhere near Oklahoma City.
I guess not. No, I should have a map out when I do this show. All right. Let's hear from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Hey, guys. I have recently discovered a really cool product. It is basically dehydrated lime with no sugar added. Comes in little packets, kind of like a sugar packet. You can add it to anything, but I have typically been adding it to my adult beverages, Mexican beers, and even just as a flavor for my water. Now, I'm curious if I am constantly having lime juice in my water or fizzy water, and my kids are constantly having lime juice in my water or fizzy water, is there going to be some sort of negative effect on my digestive system, or specifically my teeth, or more importantly, my kids' teeth? Hope you guys have a great day.
You know, that is such a good question. First of all, Carl, do you like lime? Do you like the taste of lime?
I like lime. I like lime juice. I squeeze it in my fizzy water sometimes too. And Mexican beers.
I mean, how do you compare lime to like orange juice?
I mean, they're so different. I mean, I wouldn't drink a whole glass of lime juice. I would
no,
drink a glass
you
of
would
orange
not.
Juice.
That's right. You would not. I mean, they're both citrus. And the reality is we like oranges because oranges are sweet. We bred them to be sweet. Undoubtedly, the very beginning oranges were probably not as sweet as they are now. I mean, because you think about the different kinds of oranges. I happen to love navel oranges. They're super, super sweet. I love mandarin oranges. But when it comes to lime, it's got a, you know, that stingy kind of taste that we like to use because it really alters our taste buds for other things. And think about a glass of lime juice and a glass of orange juice. You know, I mean, you're going to use hardly any lime at all in the dehydrated lime. So the answer is you're not doing any harm at all by putting that in your water and your beer. I assume it's adult beverage he's talking about is beer, or maybe he's doing it something else. But no, the answer is it's okay. It'd be okay for you, okay for your teeth. And just like everything else, to make your teeth good, to make them healthy, brush them twice a day, brush them with a fluoride toothpaste, and your teeth will be just fine, but no problem at all.
Yeah, and actually I was recently squeezing a little wedge of lime into a, you know, a Mexican beer like the caller talked about. And my five-year-old Otis was watching me do this, and he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's a lime." And he said, "Oh, I want some. Can I try it?" And I said, "Well, it's kind of more of a flavoring, not like a, you don't just eat it like an apple." And he's kind of stubborn. He's actually really stubborn. So he said, "No, I want to eat it." And I
said, "All right, he's really stubborn. Your son is really stubborn. I thought it'd be kind of like a pushover. He's really stubborn. Not your son, Carl.
Not my son.
Let's just be dad. I'll do whatever you say, dad."
Oh, right? I wish. I wish. So I gave him the, you know, the little wedge of lime and said, you know, have at it. And he just took a big bite into it like it was an apple or an orange or something. And I wish I had video of his face. It was great.
That's right. Yeah. Nobody does that unless you're a child, and then you do it once.
The funny thing was he just wanted to, you know, act like it wasn't a big deal, even though he was wincing so much from the bitter taste. But I was like, "What'd you think? Pretty bitter?" And he said, "No, I like it." No. And he was trying to pretend like he liked it. Anyways, 800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Anytime, leave us a message and maybe Zorba will answer your call. And we'll get back to those calls in just a little bit. But first, Zorba, let's get into our first topic today. Air pollution is linked to a higher risk of young children developing asthma.
Right. Very, very interesting study that came from the British Medical Journal. The issue is asthma. And the issue is, how do we prevent asthma from developing kind of in the first place? Now, I don't know if you know, Carl, but asthma is on the rise in America.
Is it?
Asthma deaths are also on the rise, in asthma. So the question is, how can we actually get rid of asthma? We know there's certain factors that affect asthma. If you have asthma, your children are more likely to have asthma. If you have allergies, you're more likely to have asthma. It turns out what this particular study was looking at outcomes. So the study took place in Denmark. Mm-hmm. And they basically looked at roughly a little bit over 3 million Danish children who were born between 1997 and 2014, looking for the onset of asthma or persistent wheezing, whether from 1 year of age to 15 years of age. Asthma is wheezing that occurs over and over again. And what they found was that children and parents, of course, with asthma had an issue. They found that mothers who smoked during pregnancy were much more likely to produce an asthmatic child. Very, very important information. In other words, smoking when the baby is in the womb makes it more likely that child is going to be an asthmatic when they get out of the womb. And so this is very interesting data, another reason why women should not smoke when they're pregnant. Smoking during pregnancy, more likely to produce an asthmatic child. Smoking in the house, more likely to produce an asthmatic child. But if you lived in an area with high pollution, especially nitrogen dioxide, that child was more likely to become an asthmatic. Really, really important. Now, the other issues that are important is, in Denmark, they have really, really good health care. I mean, they have good health care. They have good access. What they also found that low education, not poverty, because once again, poverty seems to be part of an issue, but poverty, and especially poverty and low education, made your child also more likely to be an asthmatic. And that's because of where you live, not because of access to healthcare. So the bottom line is, if you're living on a busy street and you're having a young child, you may want to consider actually changing where you're living, if you can do that, so that you're on a less busy street. But the most important other take-home message is, we know that people who are less educated and have less money are much more likely to smoke during pregnancy. That's an issue that's there. And any woman who smokes during pregnancy is doing harm to their child and should quit smoking. And if they take up smoking after pregnancy, do it out in the garage or outside. But remember, if you smoke after pregnancy, your child is more likely still to become a smoker and an asthmatic later on, probably because of the stuff that's on your clothes. Get rid of smoking. We'll have healthier children.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's go back to those calls now. Let's hear from a caller in Jacksonville, Florida.
I was calling to ask the doctor about MRIs for breasts. I had an abnormal mammogram that showed very dense breasts, and then I had a diagnostic mammogram that showed very dense breasts with a lymph node that did not appear abnormal. And they said to follow up in 1 year, but I had a radiology tech friend of mine suggest an MRI of the breast. I don't think insurance would cover that, and I didn't know if that would be beneficial or overkill. Thank you.
That is an awesome question. Is it beneficial or is it overkill? When do we do too much testing? Well, the answer is a lot of times we actually do too much testing. And so there are things called false positives and false negatives. So, Carl, have you heard of that, false positives and negatives?
Yeah, and it's mostly from you on the show. Yeah, working on the show. I've heard that.
So a false positive is, hey, there's something there when there really isn't. False negative is really the important thing. Hey, you're free of disease when you actually have it. So the false negatives are a big, big problem. False positives are a problem in that we do more testing, but false negatives are a problem in that we may not pick something out that's actually there. So here it is. She's got a lymph node, and the radiologist is looking at it and saying, hey, according to the size of the lymph node, where it is, and everything else, the protocol says, let's follow it up in 1 year. Good decision. Good decision. So the x-ray tech is then looking and saying, well, maybe you should get this extra test, this extra MRI, because indeed there may be something there. And the x-ray tech indeed may be correct. There definitely is a possibility about that. But meanwhile, she's worried that her insurance may not pay for it because it doesn't meet the protocol. Mm-hmm. So what do? So the answer is you've really got to sit down with your primary care physician or your primary care provider and put that in their lap. The x-ray tech is immediately looking and saying, hey, wait a minute, we do MRI tests and we pick up cancer that really isn't there. MRI is good. The answer is, well, MRI is good, but we don't do MRIs because they have a false positive rate also. In other words, they're so sensitive that they pick up things that are not cancer, all of a sudden causing you to have a biopsy that you don't need to have. In other words, they have a false positive rate. So you want to sit down and look at the family history. We don't have that information. What's the family history? Is this a woman where there's breast cancer in the family? That would immediately make you more suspicious and maybe there. Is this a woman who has very dense breasts but has a previous history of abnormal mammogram, which you needed to be biopsy? All these things enter into a good clinical decision as to whether or not to do it. So my recommendation to her is very specific. Call her doctor. Put it in the doctor's lab. Hey, the radiologist said, repeat it again in 6 months to 1 year. I have an x-ray tech. The x-ray tech said, no, I think you have it. You should have an MRI. Can somebody review the mammogram? Can you look at that review and make a decision? In other words, it's not a black and white decision. We can't discuss this over the air, but it is a decision that should be made with a doctor to say, hey, I think you need the MRI. I don't think you need the MRI. And then you go forward. And frankly, that's what the insurance company is going to look for. In other words, they're not going to say willy-nilly, you need the MRI. They're going to say, what are the criteria to cause an MRI for this patient so that we're not over-testing, over-biopsying, and overdoing it? That's the right answer.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Call us anytime. Leave us a voicemail. But before we take a quick break, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. So it's time again to pop off the segment we call Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
All right, Zorba, this message came from Leslie in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Leslie writes, hello, I heard the question on your show today about microwave popcorn, and I wanted to chime in. I have a relative who is married to Wayne Watson, the guy
Wayne
who won.
Watson.
Do you know Wayne Watson?
No, I love the alliteration, Wayne Watson. I'm just thinking of the name. Hi, I think we'll name our kid Wayne Watson because it just flows off the tongue.
Now, it sounds like an old country crooner. Right?
I was just going to say that. That's exactly it. I think of C&W, Wayne Watson. All right, guys, let's listen to Wayne Watson.
Take it away, Wayne.
16 tons, and what do you get?
Well, she tells us who Wayne Watson is.
Okay.
Leslie says, Wayne Watson, the guy who won a big settlement from one of the microwave popcorn makers. He ate several bags per day.
Wait a minute, Is this like the settlement from the McDonald's woman who got burned from
the hot coffee thing? It sounds similar. Okay. So he ate several bags of microwave popcorn per day, and he loved the aroma so much that when he would open a freshly popped bag, he would put his face right up into it and inhale deeply. This definitely piqued my interest. So I dug into it a little bit online, and I found an article about this case. And this is from CBS News in September of 2012. Here's the article, a little bit of the article. Mm-hmm. A verdict has been reached in the case of Colorado man Wayne Watson, who sued the manufacturer and retailers of microwave buttered popcorn that caused him to develop popcorn lung.
Popcorn lung?
That's quote in quotes, yeah. Uh-huh. So that's a thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. After eating two bags daily for 10 years, he was awarded $7 million in damages.
$7 million?
Watson was diagnosed with respiratory problems in 2007 after years of inhaling the smell of artificial butter. Quote unquote, popcorn lung refers to a potentially fatal respiratory disease that mostly develops in workers at flavoring plants who inhale diacetyl. The chemical that provides the butter flavoring and the smell. So here's my favorite part right here. This is the kicker.
Okay.
The lawyers from the supermarket chain, because they got sued as well, they told CBS that Watson's attorneys, quote, might well have warned that there were aliens popping out of the bags because there's just as much support for that. So they weren't happy about the $7 million settlement, it sounds like.
Aliens popping out of the bag. Wow. So the smell that, which is a chemical smell that is put into the bag, I never even realized there was a chemical buttery smell. I mean, I didn't really think about
it.
It was
diacetyl, the flavoring, or the artificial flavoring, I guess.
Wow. And so that basically caused problems in his lung, and they did not put in a warning on the bag of popcorn. And frankly, I don't use much microwave popcorn. I occasionally do that. Usually when we go on ski trips, we buy microwave popcorn. I'll have to look and see. I bet there's a warning on all the bags of microwave popcorn not to actually do that.
Well, I read a little further, and all the big microwave popcorn companies, they have since this lawsuit, they have changed. There's no more diacetyl in microwave popcorn. They changed the recipe.
Oh, it's no longer in microwave popcorn. So they got rid of the recipe.
They got rid of the chemical. Yeah.
Did she say she was married to Wayne Watson?
She said, I have a relative who is married to Wayne Watson.
Yeah. Married to Wayne Watson. Well, anyway, I'm not going to get his albums anymore. You know what his nickname was?
What's that?
Pop Watson.
Nice. Pop Watson.
After you got a settlement, it was Pop Watson. That was his name. Popcorn Watson. Well, it was Popcorn Watson originally after the settlement, right?
Right.
But it came to Pop Watson.
It's a good story.
It's a good story, but it actually has another value to it. It reminds us that some of the things that are put in manufactured food are really not good for us at all.
Right.
You know, and it really fits with that, you know, with that whole idea that once you get over five ingredients, it's artificial industrialized food. And I think that's really an important thing to think about.
Thanks for all the Facebook comments. And don't forget, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have many more of your calls to come, more of your emails as well. And we're going to hear from Tom Clark during our special recipe segment. All that's coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, we know you don't just listen to the show for Zorba's healthy living advice. You also show up to see what culinary delights are on Chef Tom's inspired menu. So let's head over to Tom Clark's kitchen, where Zorba and Tom are busy cooking up a batch of spinach and artichoke stuffed mushrooms.
Well, thanks, Carl. 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. But before that, recipe time, Zorba.
That's right. Spinach and artichoke stuffed mushrooms. Delicious. Now, Tom.
If you say so.
Tom, do you like...
I'm not big on spinach or artichokes.
No, so. Wait a second. When you were a young kid, didn't you see Popeye? Remember? Popeye the Sailor Man.
Popeye the Sailor Man. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's the other thing. And what did Popeye eat in order to get really, really strong and get rid of the bad guys?
A hamburger?
No, that's right. You remember, it really was funny. Remember, you used to squeeze a can of spinach, which, by the way, I find disgusting. Canned spinach does not taste the same as fresh spinach.
Let's do the recipe.
No. Wait a second. We're not done. How about artichokes? Do you like artichokes?
No, thank you.
Okay, so start out with 2 cups of baby spinach.
2 cups baby spinach.
16 to 18 mushrooms. Preferably the cremini mushrooms, but a regular mushroom, regular button mushroom would be okay. 16, 18. 2 artichoke hearts, either from a can or frozen.
2 artichoke hearts, canned or frozen.
4 ounces of cream cheese softened.
4 ounces cream cheese softened.
1/4 cup of shredded low moisture mozzarella.
1/4 cup shredded low moisture mozzarella.
Boy, you did that really well. You know, your pronunciation as a radio jock is getting better and better and better over time.
Yes,
you know, despite your age.
Hear this. Cup.
Did I do it right? You did it wonderfully. Wonderfully. 2 tablespoonfuls of Parmesan cheese.
2 big tea, Parmesan cheese.
If you love red pepper, something nice and hot like I do, 1/4 teaspoon of crushed red pepper.
1/4 little tea, crushed red pepper.
And a pinch of salt.
A pinch of salt.
That's right, a pinch.
Yeah.
Can you say a pinch, a pinch?
I just said a pinch of salt.
Okay, let's put it together. So in a small skillet, add the baby spinach along with a few splashes of water just to sort of get things going. Cook the spinach until wilted, which will be about 2 minutes. Transfer the spinach to the center of a few paper towels. Squeeze it so that all the water is drained out. So basically, you've cooked the spinach, and then you've dried the whole thing. And then in a food processor, add the spinach, artichoke hearts, cream cheese, mozzarella, Parmesan, crushed red pepper, and a pinch of salt. Pulse it until it's totally combined. Now, preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Place the mushrooms cap side up on a parchment-lined baking sheet so you don't have to do any cleanup when you're done. Fill each mushroom with a teaspoon of the spinach artichoke mixture. Sprinkle with breadcrumbs. Transfer to an oven for 15 to 20 minutes till the tops are golden brown. Transfer the mushroom to a serving dish and enjoy. I loved stuffed mushrooms. This is the recipe for you, no doubt about it.
Now, for those few listeners who weren't able to write all of the stuff down on these, how can they get this recipe?
They could go to zorbapastor.org. That's zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook. But frankly, if you go to our website, you will see fantastic pictures of Tom and fantastic pictures of me.
Our number, 800-462-7413. That's the number to call. Leave us a voicemail anytime. But Zorba, before I hand the reins back to Carl, let's put on our official Zorba Pastor on Your Health waders and slog our way through the murky waters of medical quackery. This is Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba. Okay, Zorba, I approach today's Quacking Up topic with a bit of trepidation. What can you tell us about trepanation? That is the ancient practice of cutting or drilling holes in people's skulls.
You got it, baby. You said the word correctly. That's exactly it. Haven't you ever heard the phrase, you've got a hole in your head?
Yes.
It has nothing to do with this at all. Okay. But the fact is, when we look at ancient skulls, and we as sort of the global we find out that putting holes in skulls, in other words, actually drilling holes in skulls, was actually a common ancient practice. And can you imagine why they would probably do something like that? Who do you think would be the first type of person they would drill a hole in their skull?
Somebody you didn't like?
Well, actually, that's probably the first thing, actually. You're insane. You hit it right on the head. Probably somebody you didn't like, hey, I'm going to drill a hole in your skull. So what if it's a loved one that you liked? You know, they probably did it for people who are schizophrenic, you know, who were paranoid and stuff, and they did it. But I have to tell you,
how far back is this when this happened?
We're talking about ancient times. We're talking about skulls that are tens of thousands of years old.
Tens of thousands.
When I was in Nova Scotia, I trained in Nova Scotia. My wife and I thought maybe we'd live it. We're very romantic, lived on the ocean. And they did not have a CT scan when I was there. Hard to believe, but in 1974, they had no CAT scan. And if you had a subdural hematoma, blood between the brain and the skull, sometimes you would die from it. And it often happened after an automobile accident. So I was taught if I worked in a rural area where I should drill a hole in a skull of someone to release that blood. And there was a drill. It's a hand drill that you would use. And one day, I'm an intern. I'm working in the emergency room. I get a call. There's somebody with an automobile accident from the neurosurgeon at the hospital. And he said, Pastor, get up here right away. I glove up in the ER with the neurosurgeon. And he says, where do you think you make the hole? And I put my finger in one spot, another spot. He said, that's exactly where it is. Now make the hole. And I did that. I had this little hand drill, which you went around until you made a little hole in the skull. And out popped the blood. And the person woke up. Amazing. So, I mean,
was that bilateral craniotomy?
It was a single trepanation of the skull. No, craniotomy is where you actually reduce, you know, you actually take out a piece. But as you know, in this day and age, if I did something like that, I think I'd go to jail. Or I get slapped with a metal apprentice. So trepanation, whatever way you want to pronounce it, is out. And neurosurgery for subdural hematomas are in. But let me tell you, it does not work for mental illness.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to the show? Post it on our Facebook page or just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And speaking of holes in the head, I'll send it back to Carl now. Carl, you know the drill.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. Back to our callers at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Now let's hear from a caller in Park Falls, Wisconsin.
My question is in this time of COVID, with people not being exposed to other people as much, wouldn't it be less likely that you would catch the flu and that the flu shot wouldn't be quite as important this year? That's my question. Have a good day. Thank you.
Well, first of all, yeah, the caller is 100% right when it concerns the fact that you may be less likely to get the flu. So let's talk about that first. So influenza starts in the southern hemisphere, starts in New Zealand, starts in Australia, and over time it migrates to South America, moving up to North America, and then our influenza season starts. And this cycle of influenza, we don't know how long it's been. It may have been for millions of years or thousands of years or hundreds of years, but nonetheless, we know that's exactly what happens. And so when they look at the influenza, by the way, that occurs in Australia and New Zealand, all of the companies look at actually what the genetic profile is, and then they make an immunization based on the most likely genetic profile of the influenza germ. So did you ever hear about that, Carl?
I did not know it started down in New Zealand, no.
Starts in the southern hemisphere. And you've learned about the fact that sometimes the influenza vaccine is good and sometimes it's not that good, right?
Right. That's different every year.
Yeah. Have you ever heard about why it's good and why some years it doesn't work as well?
they just didn't nail the cocktail right? Is that what the recipe is?
No. The cocktail changed. In other words, the cocktail in Australia was not the cocktail when it arrived in America. It's like the game of telephone when you were a kid, where all of a sudden, you know, what comes out basically genetically, because it's continuously changing its gene pool as it goes through. So the influenza in South America, or rather in the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, New Zealand, may be the same one that gets here, or it may have mutated by the time it gets here. And that's the problem. And when it mutates, that's when the influenza vaccine isn't very good. When it's the same, that's when it's very good. Now, his second question is, because there's less influenza, and in reality, there is less influenza in Australia this year because it's their winter, and there's less influenza in New Zealand because they are wearing masks.
Right.
So the caller is exactly right. The chances of you getting influenza because we're wearing masks is much less. But if you get influenza and COVID, your chances of dying are greater.
So still get the flu shot.
Of course, because 35,000 on the whole, 35,000 to 70,000 people a year die of influenza. Mm-hmm. And because of COVID, we're going to find that a number of people who die of influenza and COVID is going to be dramatically higher. So the answer is no, even though there will be probably less influenza transmission because of masks, it's even more important than ever to get your flu shot because the symptoms of influenza are very similar to the symptoms of COVID. And so you might not take action exactly right way the same thing. So go to your pharmacy, get your flu shot as soon as possible. That's the bottom line. And we also, there's a theory that the influenza shot may help protect you from COVID because it simply increases your immunity, sort of bumps up your immunity, turns up the volume, and that might be helpful.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave us a question, leave us a voicemail, and Zorba might just answer that. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners with so many great questions, but we also get calls from helpful listeners offering up their comments and their health tips. So let's take some time now to hear a few of these calls in the segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Thanks, we appreciate it.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. We appreciate it.
We always appreciate it. It's manna from heaven. The good comments and the bad comments. Sometimes, well, maybe they're not bad comments, but they're on the negative side of the scale. But most of our comments are really good.
Yep, a lot of constructive comments. Yeah. And first up, Zorba, let's hear.
You tell to Otis when you're giving him a comment on something that he's done?
I actually play him that theme song first, and then I give him my constructive criticism.
And Otis is how old now?
He's five.
Five-year-old brain gives it back to you, doesn't he?
He does. Well, I play him on the piano. I play that little ditty for him. Then he puts a dollar in the tip jar right on the piano.
That he gets from you.
Yeah.
So recircles.
Goes back into his college fund. Yeah.
I don't think you're engaging your child in child labor. So he's getting from the dollar independent.
All right. First up, here is a caller in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Hi. I was just listening to Zorba and the conversation about dryer sheets. The trick would be to give the person who's using the dryer sheet some wool dryer balls. They're very effective at softening the clothes, speeding up the drying, and pretty much eliminating static. Not all of it, but most of us know that dryer sheets are toxic to everyone, whether they bother you or not. So a gift of wool dryer balls would be a great thing. Thank you.
I have never heard of wool dryer balls.
You've never seen those little dryer balls? I guess I haven't seen wool ones. I've seen plastic ones that look like little COVID-19 molecules, but they're kind of spiky little.
Yeah. Are they called COVID drying balls, by the way?
They were until, now they changed the name. Yeah.
It is a name.
They thought they had a hit with that name.
Actually, they did. They did have a hit, but for the wrong reason. Exactly. So wait, these are dryer balls that go in the dryer?
Yeah, and it just kind of like, I guess I don't know what the wool ones that she's talking about, but we have these little plastic ones, and it looks like it's the size of a racquetball maybe, but it's got little spikes, like kind of knobbies on it.
You put it in your dryer?
Put it in the dryer, and it just kind of like keeps things.
What's it do?
I think it just like keeps hitting the clothing in a way that maybe keeps gets the static out of it. I have no idea. Someone else should call in with their comment and tell us how dryer balls work.
Anyway, interesting information. They're right. I don't know what the chemical is in dryer sheets. I don't think they're toxic, but on the other end, they are chemicals. Mm-hmm. You know, we just talked about popcorn and the popcorn lung chemical, what was used in popcorn. So I think if you can stay away from chemicals, and besides, it's cheaper, obviously, to get a dryer ball and have it in there all the time than to buy dryer sheets. And if you can save on money on whenever you're doing the laundry, always a good thing to do.
There you go. We have many more of your calls to come. We have another topic to discuss, and Zorba will be answering more of your emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call, where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Zorba. And then stay tuned, you might just hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, what can you tell us about the possibility of a skin color bias in the field of dermatology?
Well, there is skin color bias. I mean, if you go to a standard regular, now when I say standard regular, I'm talking about a typical dermatology book. Most of the pictures, I don't know, I've never done a check to see how many, of rashes are on Caucasians. And it's not usual to have rashes that you see on people of color, black and brown. Now, there are dermatology books, don't get me wrong, that are referenced exactly for people who are, on black and brown skin. But it's an issue if you're trained on one and then you have to look at the skin of another. And this has become an issue that comes up. Now, I just want to give an example. I went to the University of Illinois Medical School back in the 70s. When I did a dermatology rotation, I did two rotations. I did one rotation at the Westside VA Hospital and the University of Illinois Hospital. And many of those patients were African American. So I remember I had a derm book that had pictures on basically of Caucasians in those days. And I had to then translate that into a skin rash on someone with a dark skin. And it was not easy. Sure. It was difficult. Now, had I been trained and had I looked at a book where the rash of eczema, psoriasis, and others, and there's a rash with COVID called COVID toes, which is a red, a red rash on the bottom of a toe. But if it's an African American or somebody of African heritage or somebody who is an Indian who is dark on that toe, it may also appear not to be as red. It may just appear to be somewhat off color. In other words, not exactly a red color. And so the training affects bias, but the training within medicine, this is really a broad issue. So but how we're trained as doctors really is a very important thing with this. So there's a very important issue here. Number one, if you go to a doctor, if you are African American, if you're East Asian, if you're Indian, if you have dark colored skin and you have a rash, you want to ask the physician, especially a non-dermatology physician, are you used to seeing rashes on people who are of my colored skin? And if the answer is no, you may want them to also look it up, because the wonderful thing about online resources now is we can easily look at a rash and say, what does the rash look like on somebody of African heritage or someone who will say of Latino, dark Latino skin heritage? And so we don't have to pay attention anymore just to regular standard dermatology books. The web has given us a way, we doctors, a way to sort of help remove our insensitivity, if you will, to rashes on skin that basically are not all Caucasian skin.
800-462-7413 is the number to call. That's 1-800-462-7413. Leave us a question anytime. All right, let's get back to more of those voicemails. Here is a caller in Logan, Utah.
My question is, I've been losing a lot of weight recently from doing the keto diet, and so it's less about the actual weight loss, but more I've heard that it's bad to lose too much weight too quickly. I was kind of wondering what those bad health effects of losing too fast might be. Thanks.
Actually, that's an urban myth. There was an excellent article that came out a number of years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it was looking at what works and doesn't work with diets. And frankly, the bottom line was there was no consensus.
There was no consensus.
That's right. Everyone
Science is messy.
Science is messy, like I always say. It turned out that whatever works for you is okay. So number one, losing a lot of weight too quickly is not bad for you, unless you have a medical problem. You know, so if you've got something such as a sprue, which is a sprue, which is an inability to actually absorb things, or which is also known as celiac disease, that's a terrible way to lose weight. Obviously, if you have cancer, that's a terrible way to lose weight. If you've got something else that's taking away, let's say you have a medication that is taking away your appetite, that's also a bad way to lose weight. But if you're losing weight on the keto diet, go for it. I say keep it up. There's no evidence the keto diet is bad for you. There's good evidence that it works for people. And even if you gain weight and lose weight, and gain weight is lose weight, which a lot of people do, that's not even bad for you. There are so many urban myths that are involved with losing weight that it's kind of difficult to keep track of. There's a genetic issue that's there, and then there's a learned issue. And even if you've got a genetic issue where your parents are overweight, if you work really, really hard, you can end up changing your health, you know, your habits. And if the keto diet works for you, stay in it. But when you generally get off the keto diet, which almost everyone does, that's when you have to be careful. So you cannot lose too much weight too quickly. The problem is you can put on too much weight too quickly when you go off the keto diet.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. All right, Zorba. Want to get yelled at right now? Should we do that segment?
Of course. Hey, wait a second. We don't have music. Yelling at the doc.
Oh, I got to cue it up first. Brad's got to cue it up.
But are they people screaming?
Oh,
like
no.
Like they did? Remember Scream? You don't remember Scream Therapy.
I don't. How old was that?
I think I am as old as sin. But anyway, no, it was in the 60s. I can't remember what it was called. Some of our viewers, our listeners, will tell us what it was. But the idea is that you get in the room and you scream at the top of your lungs for the worst things that can possibly be, and you get it out of your system, and then you feel better.
That just sounds like parenting during a pandemic with a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old.
So who's Scream Therapy?
Everyone involved is screaming.
Family Scream Therapy.
All right. Let's do that segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh.
All right. The following email came from William, who listens to the show on WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee. William writes, Dr. Zorba, on a recent episode, I heard you say, quote, we don't use aspirin for headaches anymore. Coincidentally, at that exact moment, I had a headache and 2 aspirin in my hand. As I stood there, looking from my hand to the radio and back, there followed a short existential crisis as I began to wonder if everything I had ever learned over the past 50 years was a lie. To overcome the crisis, I took the aspirin with a glass of water and had a chocolate chip cookie. A half hour later, both headache and philosophical uncertainty were gone.
That's right.
But I don't know whether to credit the aspirin or the cookie.
Yeah.
I'm leaning towards the cookie.
I think the cookie is what ended the crisis.
That's goes right. on. Can you explain your comment, quote, we don't use aspirin for headaches anymore?
Actually, what I said was we generally don't use aspirin for
generally.
Headaches.
Generally, okay.
That's right. There's some people that aspirin works really, really well, like migraines. So if you take Excedrin migraine, it actually is half aspirin, half Tylenol. Very, very effective. So it really works for a migraine headache. But generally, we don't use aspirin anymore because it has more side effects, more likely to have a GI bleed and so on. But frankly, if I have migraine headaches, if I have a bad migraine, I take a couple of aspirin too. And if there's a chocolate chip cookie in the house, I'm going to grab it next time to see whether or not it gets rid of my migraine and solves the existential crisis that I've been having for years.
And Zorba, I just learned something. I didn't realize you could say the word half aspirin on radio. I had no idea.
Oh, you know what? You know what, Carol? Nothing gets past you. Nothing gets
Do
past
you disagree with the good doc? Take two cookies and call him in the morning. And also let us know by posting on our Facebook page, or you could always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Let's hear now from a caller in Florida.
Hey, Zorba, and I have a question about ED. Is there anything over the counter that I can take, or do I need to go see a doctor about that?
So he's talking about erectile dysfunction, and I actually have good news on that idea of erectile dysfunction. So what do we treat erectile dysfunction? We treat it with Viagra, and we treat it with Cialis. Now, Viagra is finally off patent. So, Carl, guess how much a Viagra tablet cost when it was on patent? How much did it cost? For let's talk about what was the cost per orgasm for Viagra. Well, maybe not per orgasm, but I like to think about it as a per orgasm cost.
The CPO, the cost per orgasm, probably
CPO cost. CPO,
I don't know,
no,
$60.
No, no, it was generally about between $10 and $20 a tablet. It was very expensive.
Okay,
and I had a patient the other day needed a Viagra prescription. I went to GoodRx.com. Very, very important. Guess how much it costs now?
$2.
50 cents.
Really?
50
That's
cents.
A cheap orgasm.
That's a cheap orgasm, 50 cents. Now, he doesn't have to call up his doctor. He may have to go and see his doctor. But the reality is Viagra, the price has now dropped out of the market for Viagra. Cialis is also following suit. Both of those drugs are really out. And a lot of men who basically did not use these drugs for erectile dysfunction or for improved erectile performance. So it's not that it's very interesting. In the U.S., Viagra was approved for erectile dysfunction, with the FDA never actually identifying what dysfunction was. Mm-hmm. In other words, we use the word. We have a concept of what it is. We have sort of a thing that, what is erectile dysfunction? But they actually never defined what it was. They had a strict definition, but it really didn't fit what it was for. But in Europe and in other countries, it's used for erection enhancement. In other words, so it's not just a dysfunction. It's used throughout the entire life space of a male and a male engaging in sex. So, but the problem was when these were very, very expensive pills, the pills were only used very, the opposite of liberally because they were very expensive to do. Now that the pills are available, they're not over the counter. They're never going to be over the counter because they have side effects, and they have side effects when they're with other medications. You will need a doctor's prescription, but the medication is now inexpensive at GoodRx.com. Now, let me explain what it was. At one pharmacy, for 30 tablets on GoodRx.com, it was $15, okay?
Okay.
At another pharmacy, it was $550.
Why the discrepancy?
That's right. Why the discrepancy? The only thing you can think of is money, 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 right? Why the discrepancy? I think it's an abomination. And at the other pharmacy, I'm not going to name the pharmacy, but it is a chain pharmacy commonly used in America. It's either number one, number two, or number three. I can't remember which one they are there, but right up there with the chain. And why are they charging $500 when another small pharmacy is charging $15 for the same medication when you're paying for it? I don't know, but I don't like it. So That's why GoodRx.com, GoodRx.com, if you're going to pay for any medication, always check it out on GoodRx.com. It may actually be cheaper at a different pharmacy. It may be cheaper to pay for the medication out of pocket than even to pay for your copay.
Wow.
There are a number of men that have a copay on Viagra, and it might be a copay on name brand Viagra, and it might cost them $20 a tablet when they can get it for 50 cents a tablet if they're getting the generic Viagra. GoodRx.com is your key to savings.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. It's the number to call anytime. Leave us your question. But before we head out today, Zorba, let's reach into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health mailbag. email bag, that is, and pull out a listener email. This one comes to us from Mark in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Mark writes, "Dear Zorba, on a recent program, you talked about the dangers of mercury and that hospitals no longer use mercury thermometers because of the danger. My mother was a nurse, and growing up in the 60s, we would hope they would break a sphygmomanometer."
Yeah, right. A sphig.
Okay, good. It's a long word. I even have a pronouncer that I typed out for myself, and I don't even know how to try it.
Sphygmomanometer.
No?
Actually, you know what? That's what it is. It's a sphygmomanometer. Say it again.
Sphygmomanometer.
Actually, great. Awesome. Hey, you did it, man. You did it.
Thank you.
Clap.
Now I see why you say sphig.
That's right.
Okay. Mark says, "In the 60s, we would hope they would break a sphig because she would bring the mercury home for us to play with."
Yes, yes. I played with mercury as a kid.
She asked a doctor, and he said it was okay.
It was.
So
that's right.
we'd take it to the school, right. And then we'd pass the mercury around and play with it
with our friends. That's right. Yeah, that's right. It was a wonderful bubble. It would go around. It was very heavy. You'd put it on a coin. It would be silver on the coin, and you'd pass it. I can picture it. I actually, when I was in Chicago when I was high school, I went down to a chemical supply store and bought a bottle of mercury. It was wonderful. Took it home, played with our friends and everything
that.
Yeah, yeah. I also, by the way, remember the taste of lead soldiers that I used to chew in my mouth.
Wow.
Talk about stupid.
So don't play with mercury anymore.
And don't chew lead.
Don't chew lead. Okay. We're getting good advice on today's show. No lead, no mercury. Thanks for the comment, Mark. And listeners, if you have a question or comment to add to the show, just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Carl.
If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave your question at 800-462-7413. And please do visit the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for Zorba's frequent coronavirus updates. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.